Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yes, it is the Urban Sports Scene on episode 198. We're two away from episode 200. That will be a monumentous episode. I am Wally, waiting on my man Will T to come on for the show. It's running a little late, but we'll have the whole team back and up and running and ready to go. It's been a great couple of weeks in sports. Last week we didn't have the opportunity to mention the World Series champions, the San Francisco Giants, who won the World Series, taking it 4-3. Taking the series 4-3, winning game 6 3-2 in an epic World Series. The NBA is back in effect, and we'll talk about that as well. And also, you know, here being from the DMV, we like to talk about our Washington Redskins and our Washington Wizards. The Washington Redskins had a big loss to the Minnesota Vikings after beating the Dallas Cowboys the week prior in a big game, thinking that would turn the season around. But we'll talk about that. But let's go into our pregame, which we'll start off with the World Series. First off, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Like I mentioned earlier, I mentioned that the Giants won the World Series. My thoughts of the World Series. It was a good one. Obviously, ratings didn't match the great play of the World Series. You had the Giants who've won the World Series 3 out of 5 years, but they don't have that national appeal. And then going against the Royals, obviously the underdog is a small market team, but there were great players in the World Series. But it didn't have that draw like the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers may have had in the World Series. But again, it was a compelling World Series. You had a great story with Madison Bumgarner, who looked as good as any pitcher you've ever seen in the World Series. I've heard stories about Earl Hershiser, how well he pitched in the World Series back in the 80s, and how dominant he looked. I didn't get a chance to see him. I was born, but I didn't recognize baseball for what it is as an adult. But this obviously with Bumgarner is one of the more impressive showings in the World Series that I've ever seen. I know the Florida Marlins the Florida Marlins, when they had Brad Penny and Beckett, they look real dominant. But in terms of one pitcher who shut it down, I would have to give him credit as being probably having the most dominant not World Series but postseason I've seen in a long time. But you know, the questions become going out there like, are the Giants a dynasty? You win 3 out of 5. You're a dynasty. 3 out of 5 years in any sport, you'd consider that a dynasty. The Patriots won three. The Patriots with Brady and Belichick have won three championships. The Dallas Cowboys, even in that run, won about three championships. So when you're breaking it down, like, it's a dynasty. You can't deny it. You know, you can't deny the Giants having a dynasty. Now, they may not have the appeal, the draw of a New York Yankees team or the draw of, again, like I said, the Red Sox team. But this team, you know, it's a dynasty, in my opinion.
Oh, Will, I do not agree with you.
Oh, my man Will T's here. He's in the studio. How come you don't agree?
I know I came in on the tail end of your monologue. But in order to be a dynasty, in my opinion, you have to defend your title. And that's something that the San Francisco Giants didn't successfully do. You know, if they had gotten back to the championship, to the World Series, and at least one of those champions, at least, you know, two of them were back to back, and then, you know, maybe skip a year, then you win another one. Then I think you have an honest opportunity to argue that it's a dynasty. But you can't. A point can be made that in today's free agency, with players shifting everywhere and the economics of baseball, that this may be as close as you may get in today's climate of being a dynasty. But it's hard for me to say that it is.
I just don't
agree with that.
I think a lot of people don't recognize it as a dynasty because you don't have players you relate to when you look on that roster. Now Bumgarner, who, you know, the last couple of World Series, you didn't look at him as a star, but now he's a star on this one. But, you know, when you think of a dynasty like the Yankees, You put a face to the organization. Derek Jeter, Paul O'Neill, Bernie Williams. These are guys who consistently put up big numbers. When they won their first championship, Lincecum was like the star of the team. Now Lincecum is like a bullpen guy who's truth be told didn't get any action. So it's like and Kane who didn't even play in this one. So you don't have guys you relate to. You got Sandoval who is a solid player, but he's not a superstar player.
You can go with Buster Posey.
You can go Buster Posey, but he didn't. He was a no-show in the postseason.
Well, I mean, but
Buster Posey.
You
is said, star, he,
but you just said a face.
Yeah, I know.
Buster Posey has been someone who's been consistently an all-star at his position.
Oh, yeah.
over the 5 years in the three championships.
No, Buster Posey is flat out one of the better catchers in baseball. I'm not denying that. But also, you have to put that with the run. Like in the postseason, Buster Posey did nothing. You know, so it's not like you – and Buster Posey is a good player, but we're looking for superstars. He was close to being a superstar, then the injury kind of derailed him to me a little bit, in my opinion. He's a star player, don't get me wrong, but he's not even a face. Now, Bumgarner is like the face of the team. It's like it's not a consistent face. I don't know how to explain. It's not a consistent face.
I understand what you're trying to say, but I think rather than say dynasty, just being – this was a good team that had a great run over 5 years, winning three World Series with players that were kind of interchangeable with no mega superstar would be a better way to put it rather than, in my opinion, than calling it a dynasty. I just don't see it as a dynasty. It's not a dynasty unless you defend your title on consecutive basis, unless you win back-to-back championships at least.
All right, so I mentioned a little bit in the beginning of the show about Madison Bumgarner. Obviously, this is he's got the hype right now. He's had a dominant postseason, I believe, in the World Series in his career. He has a .25 ERA within this World Series. I believe it's .43. So he can have the stigma, the aura of a guy who is a big game pitcher. Everybody looks at Clayton Kershaw as the best pitcher in baseball. Could you say that Bumgarner right now is the best pitcher in baseball?
No, just because for me personally, I think during this postseason, you'll say he was the best pitcher in this postseason. And you can make the argument that he's the most dominant pitcher in World Series history because of the ERA. But for me, to be the most dominant, you have to consistently do it year in, year out. And I think that Clayton Kershaw, he's gone on to show that, you know, this will be most likely his fourth Cy Young, and he may have an MVP going along with that. Mm-hmm. So I would have to say, Clayton Kershaw is probably the most dominant pitcher on a start-to-start basis, but Madison Bumgarner clearly did something that we've never seen in postseason history with his in the World Series.
In the World Series.
During this postseason, he was lights out.
Like .43 in this ERA. And in his career in World Series, it's .25.
Yeah, .25.
In his career.
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say he's the most dominant pitcher in World Series history.
For sure. I mean, if you look, I mean, he has five starts in the World. Five starts. He played in is it five starts? Look at the stats.
It's five starts.
Yeah, five starts in the World Series. He's four starts, five games. I'm sorry, four starts, five games. If you're looking, you know, he came in relief. So four starts, five games. And he's 4-0 in the World Series.
Yeah. Okay, I'll put it like that. To be more precise, I'll say he's had the most dominant World Series. He's the most – this
within a short
World
time,
Series.
Yeah,
yeah, this World Series was the most dominant we've ever seen because of the innings pitch and the ERA. I think that's fair. For me, what I would say.
No, I agree. I think in terms of – I like to put this in this way in terms of seeing it – in the recent World Series, you see guys who've been there a number of times. The Yankees, obviously, that's what we're going to relate to. The Yankees have been there a number of times. St. Louis Cardinals as well. He has been probably the most dominant pitcher I've seen as a team that's been have been typically always going to the World Series. He's been the most dominant individual. I mean, obviously we see Adam Wainwright, but even back then when the Cardinals was always like Adam Wainwright or Chris Carpenter. You go to, like I said, the Yankees, it's either the Yankees, a plethora of pitchers. And they were all recycled, you know, because, you know, they always had somebody.
Roger Clemens.
And when he was, you know,
Randy Johnson.
Was Randy Johnson on that squad?
I think he was on one of the championship squads.
Arizona, not that squad.
He was in Arizona and he was in...
was he on the championship squad?
I think so.
Nah, my memory can't... It serves me. I'm not sure. But you had David Cone, even back in David Cone. So you have...
But Mariano Rivera was the one consistent.
He's a reliever. Relievers don't count.
That's tough to come in and do what he does.
Oh, relievers are so... To me, relievers are so overpaid. It's not even... It's like they have too much attention, to be honest with you. You get three outs, okay? Three outs. Your starter pitchers, you're like your pitchers who couldn't hack into starters, and we're just going to make you a reliever now.
Well, it takes a certain level of confidence and a certain level of... what's the word I'm looking for? Confidence and control emotionally to come in there and get those three most important outs, especially in pressure-packed situations.
Yeah, again, your job is to get three outs. It's not to get, to pitch nine innings. It's to get three outs because you couldn't hack it as a starter.
Well, maybe that's what the route he chose.
No, he couldn't hack it. That's what happened. He just couldn't hack it. He couldn't hack it as a starter.
Yeah, it's not, he's the greatest ever.
I mean, the greatest ever what?
Closer.
Closer? We'll see. Yeah. But at the moment, I guess.
Yeah. History says so, yeah.
I don't really care for closers, but yeah, I guess so. He's the greatest close. He's the greatest three-outs pitcher ever.
I mean, he's come in and gotten more than three outs.
He's the greatest six-out pitcher ever.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll go there.
As far as two innings. Anyway, let's go to Kansas City Royals. They had a great run. They knocked out my Orioles. They knocked out the Angels. Knocked out the Oakland A's in a play-in game. They call it a playoff game. It's really a play-in game. Had a great run. You saw a lot of great young hitters. Great young talent. Period. Can this team repeat this next season?
I think there's a possibility they can. I'll definitely say that it's an exciting brand of baseball that they played. The aggressiveness on the base. On the bases, I think those small market teams are just watching them, and with the atmosphere at the ballpark, a lot of passion from the fans. It's exciting to watch. But to answer your question, I do think they can be a team that can consistently compete, be a contender over the next 3 to 6 years.
Yeah, I think they can compete. They're gonna have obviously to me. Well. They can compete. They're going to lose James Shields, who I don't really think is a big loss. They call him Big Game James Shields, but in the postseason, he was nowhere to be found. So they're going to probably lose him. But with the young talent they have, again, Kane, who came in his own, a guy who can – who he, to me, his swing, he has a nice swing. He's a beast on the base path. And on defense, I mean, there is no ball in the outfield he can't get. So they're going to have a great outfield next season with Kane. Obviously, we know about Alex Gordon. You have Moustakas at third base, Hosner at first base. I'm not sure if Billy Butler's a free agent, but they have the weapons to do damage. And let's go to that bullpen. Their starters, even they lose a Shields, they don't need a guy who can go eight innings or seven to eight innings. They have the bullpen locked down solid to a point where all they need is their starters to go about five to six. So they got a team ready to go and ready to compete. That bullpen is lights out. That's a bullpen that's going to be consistent. It's going to be there. They already exercised the option on Davis. So they're going to have Wade Davis. You've seen Holland, the closer. You got the young Herrera who throws about 100 miles per hour. And to me, their ace anyway is going to be Ventura, who's going to have probably a banging year next season. It's a young kid who reminds me of a young Pedro Martinez who throws harder. This kid is special. This team is going to compete. It's going to be hard to compete against the Tigers, who have a big payroll that tends to spend a lot of money on high priced free agents or even make big blockbuster trades to bring in all star Cy Young talent.
No, I totally agree with you, but I still think that this team will consistently be a team that, from the standpoint of a payroll, being able to compete from a compensation standpoint, as you stated, there are other teams in the AL that will be able to outspend them, but just from the talent that they have now and what they have coming through the farm system, I think they have a window to come back to the to get into the playoffs. I don't think it'll be another 25 years.
No, I don't think so. I think they'll be able to compete. But again, like I said earlier, this team did offer they extended the offer to Shields, who a qualifying offer to Shields for $15.3 million. It looks like he's going to decline it anyway. But let's see. We'll see what the Royals are next season during spring training. See how their roster is put together. Let's go to the Washington Nationals. Nationals news. The Nationals declined the options on Adam LaRoche and Rafael Soriano, so they're done as Nats. Or do you think there'll be a way, any which way, they can try to bring him back?
I mean, you know, if Adam LaRoche is willing to take a pay cut and also be able to ride the bench, but he's still a viable first baseman at this point, so I don't see that happening. Rafael Soriano, for the amount that they I'm kind of in between on this one.
Why?
From the standpoint that with Storn, when he's too, you know, if things don't go his way, he tends to, you can see the nervousness on his face.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in his body language and his face, and it affects the way he pitches. Rafael Soriano, even though a lot of people, you know, may say that he's really aloof,
mm-hmm.
but I think that's kind of the demeanor you need. You know, you don't need to get too up, you don't need to get too down. He keeps an even keel until he gets that last out. So he's a guy I would like for you to have in, you know, on the back end on that staff,
mm-hmm.
In the bullpen. But for the money that, you know, he was to be paid, just in his performance down the stretch, you know, you may be better off trying to find someone else or using those resources, deploying those resources for another area of need. So that's why I said I'm kind of in between on this one. But, you know, Adam LaRoche has been a consummate professional. He's been a Golden Glove and a Silver Slugger first baseman. He can go somewhere and still be someone's everyday first baseman. It's just they have Ryan Zimmerman. So, and they're going, and you need to find a position to have Zimmerman in. And what better position than first base for him with some of his deficiencies?
Yeah, I think both of them are gone. You need to phase in Ryan Zimmerman. At first base, Rendon will be playing third. Closer, Storn, he's young. You need to kind of get him used to, you know, to that role even more. Give him confidence. Storn has the stuff. It's all about confidence. It's all about the, you know, trying to get him that the mental makeup. But I'm, you know, mentioning moving Rendon into third, that brings an opening at second base. Cabrera's out there, but he's a free agent. They want to bring him back. There are other options out there. You hear rumors of what's his name, Howie Kendricks for the Angels is on a trading block. You have other second basemen who are out there. You can get I believe is it Lowry from the Oakland A's is out there. A couple other guys.
Or you can always go with Danny Espinosa.
You can go to Danny Espinosa.
He's a good defensive second baseman. He just at the plate. Leaves a lot to be desired.
Let me tell you about Danny Espinosa. To me, when he makes contact, he's a solid player. It's just he strikes out way too much. That's his problem. The contact aspect, when he makes contact, he's a solid player. He has pop. You look at attributes for him as a, you know, as a offensive player, he can steal bases. He has some power. He's a switch hitter. His big problem is he just can't make contact on a consistent basis. And when he's in a funk, he's in a real funk. He can't get out of it. So he's an option because he's a good defensive player. But in the National League, for the way the Nats offense is constructed, they like big offensive players. They like to, I think I look at them as a quasi American League team. So they're going to need a second baseman who can kind of, you know, who's good offensively, who's consistent offensively. Cabrera is good for them. Cabrera's a guy who used to be an all-star, played shortstop. So if you think about it, even to the point where, say, down the road, Ian Desmond may want to walk and leave because I think he's going to get one more year. And then after that, they got to frantically try to sign him or to an extension. Sign him to an extension. If they feel that they can't do it, they do have a guy who can just switch over to second, the shortstop, and you still have Espinosa on the roster. You can play him at second, or you trade Ian Desmond and get a second baseman. Either which way, you know, because Ian Desmond's out there who will be waiting, waiting for his payday. So will Jordan Zimmerman.
Well, I think just me personally and just everything you hear, and, you know, they always say believe none of what you hear, half of what you see. Jordan Zimmerman's already a goner. He's going back home to Milwaukee.
You hear that already, right? Yeah, I've heard the same. I've heard about the Cubs too. I heard he's going to Chicago to the Cubs.
I mean, that wouldn't be a bad look for him, either one of those. But if he, you know, I think you need to take this offseason and you need to make a very valiant effort to sign either one or both of these guys. Mm-hmm. And just from, you know, make a determination of what you hear, of what you're seeing at the bargaining table, if it's really plausible for you to be able to sign either one or both of them. And if not, the guy who probably is going to fetch you the most is Jordan Zimmerman. Then you have to make the decision to maybe move on from Zimmerman and see what else you can get for him, or, you know, and try to replace him in the rotation.
Yeah, because but would you trade him if you think you can't? If you think you can't re-sign him, would you just trade? I mean, I know it would hurt the chances to win a championship, because that's what it's all about right now for the Nationals. Would you trade him? He's the ace of the ball club at the moment.
If you can't re-sign him, you got to trade him. Just because if you think about it, this is a team that, you know, Rizzo, he stated that he sees this team with a window to win. And you don't want to just lose a guy like Jordan Zimmerman without anything. And, you know, that will only help prolong that window a little bit if you're able to get something for Jordan Zimmerman.
Okay.
In a way of, you know, young prospects that you can develop in your farm system, and maybe a player who can help you right now.
All right. So do you think Bryce Harper is happy? Denard Span got his the Nats exercised the option on Denard Span. You think Bryce is hard? You think Bryce is happy?
I mean, Bryce Harper is going to have to be happy. I mean, even if they didn't exercise the option with Denard Span, you still have Michael Taylor who came up and looked pretty good, and he looks like he's the center field
of the future.
Mm-hmm. So Bryce Harper is just going to have to deal with it.
He's a left fielder.
Yep, you're a left fielder. Deal with it. Unless you want to get behind the plate and go back to being a catcher, which you were in high school.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do that. That's a short career span in terms of playing baseball, especially with the offensive tools that Bryce Harper possesses. It'd be a waste. Let's go up to 295. Up 295.
Hey, if that's what you want to say.
Down 295. Down up. I have no idea.
It's up 295.
I was right. Man. See, I was right. I said up 295.
Yeah, I just giving you a hard time.
I know. See, that's messed up. See, I was right. Now I look like a bumbling idiot.
No, you don't, man.
Anyway, man, let's go to the Orioles. The Orioles extended a qualifying offer. Same thing the Royals did with James Shield. A qualifying offer to Nelson Cruz for $15.3 million. That's basically a way to protect themselves if he signs elsewhere. They can get like a some type of compensational pick or something like that, or a player. I'm praying that he takes this deal. He's an older player.
I mean, he better take it before they pop him again for PEDs.
That's messed up. He didn't get popped. He didn't get popped this season.
I mean, he didn't get popped.
That means he
probably found a good masking agent.
Nah, go ahead, man.
That's all it is.
Nah, Nelson Cruz, this is a must. I feel like Nelson Cruz is an essential sign for this team to repeat to win the AL East. If they don't re-sign Nelson Cruz, it's going to be hard for this team to repeat. Again, I'm going to say this. The Yankees and Red Sox will retool. It's going to happen. People, Oriole fans, it feels good to win the AL East, but let's be real. These teams will retool.
I mean, to be honest with you, just as someone who supports the Yankees, the Yankees probably aren't going to be what they were for between 2 to 4 years. Right. They have money, but they aren't willing to spend like they have been previously. You know, they didn't sign back a guy like Robbie Cano.
Robert Cano was overly greedy. He was overly.
I mean, he was over, but he deserved every penny he got.
Doesn't look like it now.
I mean, he helped. He improved that Seattle Mariners lineup.
No, that was a. He didn't even hit for the power. The stats wise, he didn't deserve the money he received.
I mean, he hit over 300. Didn't he? I mean, today's baseball hitting over
300 is great. That's fine. If you want 200, was it 2+? 200 plus?
Yeah, 204.
That's, you got to hit 30 home runs with 300. You just can't hit 300. He had, because he went to a bigger ballpark, his power was exposed. He had there's Yankees power and there's real power. All right, the short porch. Robbie has power. I mean, Robinson Cano has power. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking his power. But there's Yankees power and there's real power. His numbers were exaggerated by playing on that short porch. He didn't have to do it so much to hit a home run. It's, you know, and obviously for the Yankees, he felt like he was a 200-plus hitter. I mean, 200-plus million-dollar player, which he never was, in my opinion. He was a great baseball player. 200-plus, $200 million contract goes to the best player in baseball. That's my opinion. If you can get that amount of money, you got to be the best player in baseball. He wasn't the best player in baseball by any stretch of the imagination. He was a great base. He was the best second baseman, but wasn't the best player. A second baseman isn't a guy you give $200 million to.
True, but then you give like $100 million plus to Jacoby Ellsbury.
Dude, that's not smart either.
Yeah.
Overpaid. I like Jacoby Ellsbury. I think he's a solid baseball player.
Yeah, I was – that left a lot. When that happened, I was just like, his moves like this is going to be the reasons why the Yankees don't compete for a pennant for a couple years.
I expect them to make moves to – they will pay – top dollar for a player they actually need.
They need a lot of help pitching.
Pitching wise, they had some individuals who were hurt, but they'll be healthy next season.
And plus,
go ahead.
And A-Rod
comes. A-Rod's back. That's essential. I want to know.
Did you hear about?
Yeah, his cousin.
Yeah, paid his cousin a cool million to shut up.
Why would you have to? Yeah, well, hey, that's a cool cousin.
Yeah.
Did he snitch?
No.
That's blood. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If Michael Vick had folks like that, he would never been locked up.
I mean,
up.
You take care of the one who provides.
Exactly. You don't snitch on somebody who's going to give you money.
I don't understand people's logic.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you know what I mean?
Whatever.
People with these hoes ain't loyal.
Yeah.
What's the name of the song? I can say hoes.
You can say hoes. We aren't regulated by FCC.
Yeah. That's the song, right? These hoes ain't loyal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. Like thoughts and stuff like that. Whatever.
Men can be hoes too.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Men can be hoes. Men are real hoes. They ain't loyal either. ninjas ain't loyal.
Pretty much.
Ninjas ain't loyal at all. They're like, shoot. Anyway, the Orioles reportedly are working on a 4-year deal to re-sign Nick Markakis. I would love for that to happen. Looks like I think it will happen. The Orioles probably will have Nick Markakis. At first, I thought Nick Markakis would be a guy who would be gone. It looks like he will re-sign. So that's big up to the Orioles keeping the foundation together. So keeping Nick Markakis will be good for this team to at least contend and win the AL East, to try to win the AL East, excuse me. Let's go down to pregame. Joe Maddon, he leaves Tampa. I heard he ditches Tampa like dirty to go to the Cubs. I think it's a better move. I like the move, though.
I like the move for him. It makes sense. He's a guy. He's one of the smartest managers in all of baseball. He's a guy, and I hate to use this term, but I'll use it because this is how people describe him. He thinks outside of the box, which I hate. I hate that term, thinking outside of the box.
Why do you hate it?
Because it's implying that everyone else
is stupid.
Not stupid, but everyone else, like your creative genius or your analytical skills are so much genius than everyone else.
Okay.
When I don't think that's it. It's just you see things from a different perspective. It's, you know, your life experiences have taught you to see things from a different perspective and analyze things differently, which, you know, but we are all the sum of our experiences. But I just hate that term, thinking outside of the box. He's a guy who's a master motivator. And, you know, during his opening press conference, he bought the Chicago media a shot and a beer because they had the press conference at a bar.
At a bar?
Yeah.
So classy.
Yeah, that's classy. I like Joe Maddon.
He's a realist.
Yeah, he's a realist. He's a straight shooter. I think he's going to do great things for that Chicago Cubs franchise, which hasn't won a World Series in like almost 90 years. Yeah. So if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm happy about the prospects of Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein. You know,
I like the combination.
Yeah, running my ball club. But if I'm Tampa, I'm like, damn, because I really have gone into oblivion and not being important anymore.
Yeah, definitely. There's a team that lost David Price now and James Shields over the last couple of seasons. And now they lost their manager, who was known as probably one of the best managers in baseball. Joe Maddon, I think, is going to do wonders over there in Chicago. You got Starlin Castro, one of the better young shortstops in the game. You got Anthony Rizzo, one of the better young first baseman in the game, who has a lot of power. So he has guys who he can work with. Jake Arrieta, who played for the Baltimore Orioles, is now on that pitching staff and had a great season. So Joe Maddon will do wonders over there in Chicago. I think he'll do great work. Real quick, I wanted to mention this: the Orioles, Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, and also J.J. Hardy got gold gloves. So big ups to those Baltimore Orioles. Let's continue to go down the pregame. Paul Monitor was named the Twins manager. I'll speak real quick. Paul Monitor was a great baseball player. He was a Minnesota Twin as well. Great hitter for average. He's going to be a rookie manager. It's always interesting to see how Hall of Fame coaches/managers try to adapt to the younger players in that field, whatever field it may be, either basketball, football, whatever sport. It's always interesting to see how that works out. I remember seeing Magic Johnson try to be the head coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, and that was a whole different culture shock for Magic. And it, being a star, you never understand. You don't really realize. I think superstars have a problem, or Hall of Famers, whatever you want to call it, having problem coaching average players, because they think that these players have the same ability that they have, and they really don't.
I mean, I think that's anything you do in life. If you're exceptional at something, and you have other, when you're exceptional at something, it comes easy to you, even though you may have to put in a lot of practice and hard work to do it. But once you reach a certain point, you're just like, well, it's easy to me. Why aren't you getting it? And that creates frustration. So anytime you're great at something and you have to, especially in sports, and you as a player, and then you go to the coaching or the front office position, you have to have extreme patience and have to understand that everyone either A, isn't naturally as talented as you, or B, doesn't practice as hard as you. So it's going to be some frustrations, but maybe he, improves that Twins team and improves their fortune.
Yeah, that team just need a new voice. Ron Gardenheiner, whatever his name is, has been there for like forever. So that team just need a new voice, and maybe Paul Monitor can. I feel like he can relate to somebody like Joe Mauer, a good hitter, a guy who hits for a high average. Let's go to football. This is good news to me. I'm kind of happy about this because I have him on my fantasy football team. Adrian Peterson will enter a no contest plea. Will this individual play this season?
What are we in week? Coming up on week 10?
Yeah.
I think he doesn't play until week 13.
Week 13, so that's four games. You think four games? Well, no, that's three games.
Yeah.
Well, four games, actually. Ten.
Because you're gonna they're going to argue that even though that he was away from the team, he was still paid.
Yeah.
And during when other players are suspended, they aren't paid. They're away from the team and they aren't paid. So he's being compensated to stay away. So then I think Roger Goodell will say, well, you entered a no contest plea, basically not admitting your any guilt, but it's still reviewable 2 years from now. So I think he'll probably have to do like a two to four game suspension without pay.
If I'm Adrian Peterson, if I'm you, that's quicken this whole process up, man. I need you on my fantasy football team for week 13. We need to make a strong push for the postseason. So, Adrian Peterson, if we can just get the ball running right and moving now. If anything, just give your money back. Give that money back to the Vikings and the NFL. That way, maybe you can play, because I need you back on my roster.
I mean, that would be a compromise and workaround. If he says, okay, I've been away from the team for what? 10 for 8 games, however long. He only played like what, 1 or 2 games?
Yeah.
And then he says, okay, I'll forfeit 4 of my game checks for you to make me eligible now. I think that would be fair.
Wouldn't it be fair? Ninjas ain't giving up money.
I wouldn't either.
All right, this one kind of hurt me, man. I felt bad for him. In the NFL, Marcus Lattimore is thinking about retiring. Should he?
If he continues to have, I think it's what, almost 3 years removed from that knee op, from that gruesome knee injury. If he still has the will and the passion to wake up and a football player is what he sees himself as, then yeah, but just realistically, if your knee isn't right yet and you have to continuously rehab, that's more and more time you're losing out on your ability to get on the field. And you got to just realistic. You're still a young man. You have other things you can pursue. So you shouldn't chase this thing forever if your knee isn't going to hold up. Just rehabbing and being able to practice. And then you still haven't faced game contact yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you still have to overcome that mental and that physical hurdle. So, you know, if he has seen, you know, the last of a professional football field, you know, I wish him the best of luck in life. And, you know, you lived your dream during college.
I mean, just as a fan of football, I would just love for him to continue and try to be an NFL running back, because that was just too much talent that was just taken away because of a gruesome knee injury. And you're think to yourself, like, what could have been if this individual never have hurt his knee in college? You know, that's why I'll never knock Jadeveon Clowney for taking off. I don't care about. I mean, you're your own investment. If you get hurt, nobody else gonna care about you.
Yeah, and plus we don't know if he took out a massive insurance policy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know. Yeah,
so you don't know.
Anyway, real quick, we gotta make them speed this out. Mike McCarthy got signed a multi-year deal with the Packers, so he'll be the Packers head coach for a minute.
Good for the Packers.
Yeah, good head coach. Won one Super Bowl. A little overrated to me, but it is what it is. One Super Bowl, and I think people act as if he's like the best coach, one of the best coaches in the world. Just my opinion. Let's go to college football playoff rankings. There's been an update in the rankings. Let me look at it. Here you go. Mississippi State's number one, Florida State two, Auburn three, and Oregon four.
You won't hear any arguments from me on that. Some people will say Alabama deserves to be in there, but ultimately Alabama has the chance to move into the top four because they play Auburn and they play LSU this weekend, and if they're able to win the SEC West, they'll definitely be in there.
Do you see this four being a solid four?
Out of all of them, the only one I say that isn't going to leave the top four is Florida State. Okay. I mean, that if you had told me to push all of my chips to the middle of the table and bet on one team that will not fall out of the Final Four, it's definitely Florida State.
Florida State, yeah, I think I agree with you. Florida State, since they beat the tough. I mean, Louisville was supposed to be their biggest challenge, was it?
Louisville. Then they still have Miami, and they have to play Florida, and they have to play Duke most likely.
And Florida's had a big win against Georgia.
Yeah.
So yeah. There are some teams that, you know, can compete, but I'm with Will. If I'm looking at the teams remaining in the top four, in the Final Four, I'm going to go with Florida State to stay in that spot. Obviously, did you see the SEC? These teams will probably be knocking each other out anyway. I could lean towards Oregon kind of staying in that position. They still have to play USC, right?
And that, in my
opinion, that may be their toughest game, but I think they can handle USC. I'm a lean with Florida State. And plus, you just see how Jameis Winston, even when they look like they're about to be upset, that guy just takes it to another level, as you saw against Louisville.
That's why I said he should be the number one pick.
Oh, he definitely, hands down, he should be number one pick overall. Anyway, it's about time for a commercial break. When we get back, we're going to talk about my Washington Redskins' disappointing loss against the Minnesota Vikings. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning. This morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. you think you know, you have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make. Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today,
this one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. With my arms out wide, I open my eyes, and now all I wanna see is a sky full of lighters. A sky full of lighters.
Time you hear this, I will have already spiraled up. I would never do nothing to let you cowards f*** my world up. If I was you, I would duck or get struck like lightning fighters. Keep fighting, put your lighters up, point them skyward, Had a dream, I was king, I woke up, still king. Snap canes, nibble is mine for the milk king. Till nobody else even f***ing feels me, till it kills me. I swear to God, I'll be the f***ing illest in this music. There is or there ever will be. Disagree, feel free, but from now on I'm refusing to ever give up. Only thing I ever gave up's using. No more excuses, excuse me. If my head is too big for this building, and pardon me if I'm a cocky, but you a slick popping on how you flipped your life around. Crockers, who you trying to kid? Flip, you the opposite, you stay the same. Back with the steel, you. I love it when I tell him shove it, cause it wasn't that long ago when Marshall said busted black, luster, cause he couldn't cut, mustard, muster up, nothing brain fuzzy, cause he's buzzing, woke up from that buzzing. Now you wonder why he does it, how he does it. Wasn't cause he had buzzing circle around his head, waiting for him to drop dead, was it? Or was it cause them bitches wrote him off? I guess it doesn't matter now, does it?
Yeah, we're back on. Again, the phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Alright, you can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbeam.com. Walio is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbeam is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Grid Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. Again, I'm going to repeat this again. Our phone lines are open, so please call. The number is 202-495-0904. All right, Redskins, Minnesota. Did you watch the game, Ice Willie T?
Yeah, I saw. I actually got a chance to see all of it. I didn't get to go to my favorite local sports. Well, it's not really local sports bar to watch it. You know, it's a great atmosphere. That bar I usually go to is a great atmosphere and very heavy.
I heard
Washington fan influence. I did get a chance to see it. I think, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty at certain points of the week of whether Robert Griffin III was going to start. And there was also a lot of people making the argument that Colt McCoy should have started that game. Me personally, I'm of the thought process of if Robert was able to practice and get the time and get the reps in practice and he looked good and he was able to do the majority of the things we saw him do during his rookie season, then he should have started. And I think they did make the right decision because you not only are, and I understand it, the game was pivotal in potentially getting Washington back to 4-5. And then, you know, having the game this you know, after the bye at Tampa to get back to 5-5 and getting back to 500 that deep into the schedule. But this season at the quarterback position is more importantly about evaluating for the future. We've seen what Robert Griffin III, when he was RG3 in his rookie season, and he put up quite possibly the best from a passer rating perspective, the best rookie quarterback play we've seen ever. Last year, with all the injuries and then, you know, the three-ring circus with Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan and, you know, Robert Griffin III, him also. And we didn't get a chance to see him be as dynamic as he was during his rookie season with him using his legs to make plays. this year, you know, he got off to a pretty decent start in that first game. Then he was scorching in the second game when he got injured against Jacksonville. So you want to be able to see him put it together over consistent eight games. I think he will have eight more games left. You want to see him put it together over these eight games.
Yeah, 2-6.
Right. As Jay Gruden has said, you want to see consistent improvement from a young quarterback. And the best way to see that is to evaluate him over these last eight games and see him consistently improve.
But do you take – this is my thing. Do you sacrifice the team winning games? Not to say that like he wasn't ready. That's not what I'm saying. Do you sacrifice the team winning a game or two for the betterment of RG3? You're putting RG3 over the team, in essence.
Well, at this point, you have to, because you invested so much in him. And, you know, after this season, he's out. You have to make a decision on, mm-hmm. are you going to extend him for that fifth-year option? So you have to know going into this offseason, do we make this thing a more open competition between him and Colt going into next season, or is he our guy? And if he isn't our guy, what is the bridge? What is our next option? Where do we go to next? So you have to be able to evaluate him. And just realistically speaking, even though Colt McCoy had the high hand over that second half against Tennessee and then against Dallas on Monday night, a healthy Robert Griffin III realistically gives you a better chance of winning, mm-hmm. opposed to Colt McCoy. And even though we haven't really seen Colt's full extent of his talents because of the talent surrounding him in Cleveland, you know, he had 22 starts with probably the worst supporting cast we've seen with a young quarterback in a long time, and he flamed out. So he had the second chance, and, you know, he was hot against Tennessee in the second half, and then he had he completed 85% of his passes against Dallas?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you know what you have with Colt. Now you have to see, is Robert Griffin III healthy enough to be that guy over these last eight games and consistently be better? And can he be the quarterback of the future?
Pose the question, after watching the game, should RG3, do you think RG3 should have started against the Vikings? My man George said yes without, this is on our Facebook page, he said yes without forcing a turnover, and I believe without starting one drive in the opponent's territory, the Redskins scored 26 points. RG3's numbers were good, although he gets some blame because two very poor throws that were completely on him cost the team. I know, yeah, again, to me, that game, he choked on that pass. That's the thing that annoyed me the most. We look at this guy who shows so much bravado, you know, since he's been here in Washington. Then all of a sudden, on a big throw, a throw that was an easy pass, or, to be honest with you, had the running option. Yeah, he could have easily ran for the first down. And you look at it and like, okay, well, wow, you choked. And it's the same thing. I remember, you know, and you've heard me a number of times complain about Kirk Cousins, saying Kirk Cousins couldn't close, he would choke. Well, I have to be fair. You know, I'm a pro RG3 guy, but to be fair, I can't have my listeners listen to me and say, like, this dude isn't just – he just favors RG3. He choked. I mean, he choked. He threw a bad interception in that situation. We're up 10-0, probably a little bit less than a minute in the half, and he throws a pick. A pass that had no chance to be completed. You threw it to you try to force a pass to Andre Roberts. It's not like you're forcing a pass to DeSean Jackson or Pierre Garçon or Jordan Reed. You're forcing it to Andre Roberts, who has been a bum for the Washington Redskins. I mean, as an acquisition, as a wide receiver, as a returner, he's been fine. But as a receiver, he's been blasé. Then on that last drive, a guy that we look at in terms of saying, a guy I want it all on me, states it and flat out chokes on that pass. Again, he, instead of like being safe and instead of like, you know, taking that risk of throwing that pass, saying that maybe Pierre Garçon could have dropped it, he had the whole lane for the first down on his own. And we saw him again in 2012. I'm going to keep saying it. That was a different dude. Forget the speed. I'm just talking about the mentality. He ran against Tampa, and that one play ran for about 20 yards. That lane was there. With his speed, straight line speed, not side, not lateral speed.
I don't think
speed.
He has that explosiveness anymore.
No, he has the speed straight line. If you look at him going straight, he has the speed. Now, him going laterally, oh, it's terrible. his lateral speed is bad, but you can still see his straight line speed. Once he makes that one cut and go, like a running back in the zone offense, he can do it. But again, it's like his mentality is a little bit different. I mean, has he lost speed? I agree with you, but I still think he's fast enough.
I'm not going to say he's lost speed. I think he's lost that explosiveness. You know, to use a word that I've made relatively popular on this show. He's lost his burst.
His burst? Yes, you haven't made it popular. Not on this show. You made it popular by playing basketball, son.
I think he's lost that burst, that giddy up, that explosiveness that made him that dynamic as a runner.
Mm-hmm.
Something that, you know, he had, as a track star. I don't think he has that anymore, or he doesn't have it currently because of the knee and the ankle issues that he's had over the past 3 years.
I kind of disagree, only because I see it. Excuse me. I see it when he takes the one step and goes forward. Like when he doesn't play and doesn't hesitate, you can see it. Even when that play where they ran the read option, he decided he was going outside, and all of a sudden he just busted inside, and then you could see the burst. Like, you saw it, and I was like, yeah, that's why. Like, when you're running, because laterally, he's just like, when you see Kaepernick run laterally, you see the speed. It doesn't matter. But when you see RG3, like when RG3 goes straight, when his straight line speed, because he's a sprinter, right? Straight line speed, he's fine. I saw the burst, but I agree with you. I mean, it's not the same, because to me, again, his rookie year, even going laterally, his speed was still true. Like, he still beat the edge. Like, his speed, like, he would beat the edge. Now it's like, you just see, to me, I just see lateral speed. I see straight line speed, not lateral speed. But maybe he did lose his burst. But again, I mean, there's still confidence. Like, you can get that first down running a straight line speed, running a fourth, four or five, easily.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone who saw that game will dispute the fact that, you know, with that, what was it, like, fourth and six?
Yeah.
He had to open. He could have easily, with his speed, he could have easily gotten the 6 yards. I don't think there's anyone who saw that game would dispute
that. I even think he would get more yards running that than passing it to Pierre Garçon.
But, you know, ultimately he made a decision. It wasn't the best decision. Some people said Colt McCoy wouldn't have made that decision. We don't know what Colt McCoy would have done.
I don't think Colt McCoy would have made that decision. But again, I believe in RG3. It's not like I don't believe him. Truth be told, he had a good game other than those two mistakes.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, you know, he played a pretty good game for a guy who came, you know, who's missed, what, 6 games, who's coming back after 6 games. So give the guy time. All of you Washington fans, I know that, you know, just 2 years ago, he was the savior. He was Black Jesus.
Yeah, I stated that. I used to call him Black Jesus.
You called him Black Jesus. You know, you were his boy. I don't know if you watched
No, I that heard that. On. Nah, that
you
show.
Were like Booney. You know, you were his boy. You were Booney.
OC. That show's OC.
I love that show.
I probably is, but OC. I love feel like show, lightning's man. Gonna strike somebody in that show.
Nah, I love that show.
I heard it's hilarious though.
Yeah, it was.
The dude that did the Boondocks is doing that, right?
Yeah, Aaron McGruder. Yeah, and my favorite comedian of all time, Corey Holcomb's on there.
Oh, is he?
Yep.
Yeah, I know that's your dude. You stay telling that dude.
Yeah, dude, he's hilarious. Yeah, funniest guy out now.
You saw him when he was in town, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Seen him a couple times.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a bye week, so it'll be a bye week. Hopefully, they'll get things ironed out. He still holds on to the ball. His pocket presence can improve. He stays in one launching point. I feel like RG3 never tries to move the pocket when he's in the pocket. He never tries to move around in the pocket. It's like he stays in one spot, and it's easier for a pass rusher to kind of get to that spot. They know when a pass rusher knows where you're going to be at, obviously it's easy to sack you. And for a mobile quarterback, RG3 needs to kind of get away from that whole mindset. This is my thing with RG3. You're not Peyton Manning, you're not Tom Brady. Stop trying to beat them. God bless you with speed. use what God gave you.
No, I think, what was it, either pregame or running up to the game, one of the interviews, he said he was going to be the best quarterback that God made him to be. You know, I mean, he didn't come back to be average. He came to be the best him that God allowed him to be. And I think, you know, people took nuggets from that, meaning that he was going to use his legs and run when he had the opportunity to. Clearly that didn't happen.
Yeah.
When in the most pivotal moment. But like I said, he's a young guy. This is what, just his second season starting as the starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, that's one of the things he'll jot down on his notes that he was taking over the weeks when he was out, and he'll learn from it.
Yeah, I know, right? He was taking a lot of notes.
He's taking a lot of notes. Hopefully, you know, when he played Seattle, he got Russell Wilson to review him and to help him out.
So. Yeah, because, you know, according to folks, these two ain't black enough. Yeah. that's crazy. All right, let's go to the Redskins defense. Should the Redskins consider firing Hazlitt before the season ends and make Raheem Moore the defensive coordinator? Reason why I say this,
I'll take it a step further. They should have fired his ass last year.
Yeah, they should. But the reason why I say this is because you want to – I mean, you were here for last week. Me and Al were talking about last week's game. You saw how, you know, the defense played an ultra-aggressive zero blitzing. You obviously seen this team play good in man coverage. You saw Breeland look good in man. Amerson played good in man coverage. And then you went from playing a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback in Tony Romo to playing Teddy Bridgewater and decided to play zone.
Well, see, here's the thing. If you noticed, Haslett's defenses during his time in Washington only get up for games against Dallas.
So true.
You know, he, as he stated, you know, I think John Gruden stated, well, no, whoever was calling the game this past Sunday said that Haslett installed like 27 blitz packages versus Dallas. So we know one thing. When he's being aggressive, that's when his defenses are at his best. I'm not going to say he doesn't have the aptitude. He hasn't shown the ability to change strategies during the game if one thing isn't working. He'll stay with one thing and hope and praise that it works. So for those reasons, and I think even during the post game press conference, you sense the aggravation in Jay Gruden's voice over the defense's performance. I think it's probably something that they'll address, you know, during the bye. They'll try to tighten things up, and you know, I think that Haslett knows that he may be on a short leash these final eight games if that defense doesn't produce better.
He should. That's
or,
dumb.
You know, some could make the argument that because Brian Arakpo wasn't there, the defense just, you know, hasn't been what it used to be.
You know what? I mean, Brian Arakpo could have helped. He could have helped. That pass rush wasn't even close to what it's been, even with the Brian Arakpo. I'm just saying, even though the rookie had a sack against a weak Khalil anyway, who was struggling the whole year.
Yeah, I remember when Khalil came out of USC, everybody was saying he's going to be the next great left tackle.
Yeah, and then look at him now. He's struggling. But hold on, I'm going to read this off. Like dead air. I got like dead air right now. Here we go. No, that's not it. That's not it. All right, here we go. Got it. All right, found it. So on a Facebook page, and I'm on a Facebook group that I'm on, I'm going to read off some comments about Jim Haslett saying, should Jim Haslett be fired? My man John said, at this point, Jim Haslett should stay until the season is over. My man Terrell said, RG3 did his job, but hasn't didn't, but he might as well finish the season. My man Lewis Coleman said, plain and simple, no, that would just cause a lot more unnecessary noise that we don't need. I agree. That would be
I totally agree with you with that last comment, because what has this football organization been known for more over the past 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
The noise. Everything to deal with outside of football.
Mm-hmm.
So making the change now during the, you know, even though some people say the most logical thing to do would be to get rid of him now. You have Raheem Morris on the staff who knows the defense, who's had experience calling defenses as a defensive coordinator, make the change now. But that would just bring more attention, more unwanted attention for the wrong reasons on this to this team. And you don't want any more noise that's going on outside of the noise that's already going on.
My man Lonzo said RG3 did his thing coming back off injury 2 months ago, 18 to 28, 251 yards, one touchdown, one interception. He said, I mean, it was good enough to win the game. And late in the fourth quarter, he drove us down the field twice for the go-ahead lead. Defense was the problem. Haslett did not use anything close to what he did against Dallas. That issue needs to be addressed on the offseason. Totally agree. I don't know how he didn't do it against Dallas and used it against the Vikings. My man Buck Love, his skins hair said, yeah, he did lose the game. And my man Curtis Lindsay said, how can you blame the coach more than the players? Come on, man.
I agree with that last comment. A coach just puts in the game plan. Mm-hmm. Players, it's up for you to execute. Mm-hmm. Now, some could say a coach could put in the wrong game plan and leave his players vulnerable. But, you know, and I definitely think that, you know, we saw spots where he left that defense vulnerable, specifically the first play when Teddy Bridgewater missed the bomb. And then also the other one to Cordell Patterson, where Cordell Patterson's like open 30 yards open downfield, but Teddy Bridgewater throws it 35 yards.
So, yeah. And to me, I look at it like, all right, well, Teddy Bridgewater showing he's not accurate on the bomb plays. Why not just blitz him anyway? You know, blitz him. You know he holds the ball anyway. Blitz him. Put pressure on him. He's a rookie. I'm a fan for him to be fired. Actually, truth be told, I'm a fan for him to be fired right now during the season. But I do, in terms of that individual who had that comment about having noise, I agree with them though. I do agree with it. It would be noise, but I'm as a Redskins, I'm fed up with them. To me, just what you did against the Cowboys with that game plan against a veteran quarterback, and you play a rookie, and as if you treat the rookie like he was a vet. It annoys me.
Against the Cowboys, y'all won that game in Dallas. That's your Super Bowl. Washington fans should be happy for just that.
No, it's not my Super Bowl because now that win's for naught. That win means nothing right now. It was great.
A lot of fans say if they win two games in those two games against Dallas, no, because good. Of the rivalry, because of this rivalry.
It's a rivalry. I contacted a bunch of folks from Dallas. It's a big-time rivalry.
Yeah, okay.
I felt good about that, too.
All right.
I felt, you know, so Mr. 85%, you listening, too? But you know
that's not a sufficient.
Son, I did some crucial surveying. Hey man, I went to the people. That's what I do.
Okay,
I go to the people, and the people in Texas let me know. I go to the people.
You didn't have a large enough test sample.
Hey, you haven't seen the tweets I put out there, son. They were like hundreds.
Okay,
hundreds.
All right,
I copies and paste, son. That's the blessing of copy and paste.
If you say so.
Yeah, son. I went on groups, Twitter, everything. I took it to the people. And if you're from Texas, you know, call in. The number's 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Listen to the Urban Sports thing. Call and let my man know that, you know, the Redskins, Dallas Cowboy thing is mean up there in Texas. People in Cowboy Land want to beat us. Jerry Jones lets you know that people in Cowboy Land want to beat us. Truth be told, he lets you know that. The man went down the sideline, talked to Jason Garrett, like, let Tony Romo play.
Said, you know, Tony's healthy.
Yeah, and then in the interview, he was like, yeah, this is big. The whole NFL comes to see this game. That's what the owner said.
Okay.
I'm just saying that's what the owner said. All
right.
I ain't say it.
Okay.
I'm just saying, but let's stick with the Redskin thing. Ryan Clark. You suck. All right. I'm not gonna say he sucks. Ryan Clark, you're horrible. You suck. You shouldn't play anymore. ESPN is looking for you. They want you there. You're great. You're a great analyst. Like you should be at ESPN like now. Like truth be told, after the bye week, go there. Just go. During the bye week, go. Stay there. Don't come back. ESPN folks, I don't even know who the president of ESPN. Lock his door. Don't let him out. Let him stay there. I'm for Philip Thomas taking his job. I want to see what he can do anyway.
Just because I think Jay Gruden's really big on showing improving and making guys compete. He's shown that he, you know, with Silas Red pulling Alfred Morris and putting in Silas Red. I think he'll be, I'm not going to say forced, but I think he'll explore that option just because of the play of Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark has consistently been out of place on blown assignments. And unless he's in a box or close to the line of scrimmage right now, that's the only way he's really effective. And, you know, with him and Brandon Merriweather, both of those guys are only effective when they're close to the line of scrimmage.
Totally agree.
So you're going to have to see what Philip Thomas can give you if he's healthy.
Totally agree. There's no need for me to add on that. Play Philip Thomas. Release the beast.
If he's healthy.
Release the crack. He played. I mean, he was activated.
He was activated.
He played special teams.
I mean, that doesn't mean he knows the defense.
Yeah, I mean, you said healthy.
Excuse me. If he's healthy and he knows the defense.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you that. Yeah. Release the Kraken. Because, like, Ryan Clark, I don't even know what he is. I can't even.
Is he? Does he have another year on that contract?
I don't know.
Does he
only have one maybe year? A one-year deal. I think it's a one-year deal. That man's stealing money. Well, he's stealing the church's money. I'm sorry.
Well, no, he provides leadership in your locker room.
He's stealing the church's money.
He provides leadership in your locker room.
What leadership? These guys party after they lose. I don't. He's Ryan Clark. He's glorified for loving Sean Taylor. I love Sean Taylor too. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's all coming out now.
It's all
coming out now.
Let your true feelings out. How you really feel about Ryan
for loving, he's glorified for loving Sean Taylor. I mean, Sean Taylor was a great player. Had a great. Truth be told, the reason why he's a Redskin is because he had a great relationship with Sean Taylor. I mean, and I wanted him too because I thought he was an intelligent safety, and at least he would teach the young guys something. But all he's teaching the young guys is not how to cover and how to miss tackles in the open field. To me, Bakari Rambo was better than Ryan Clark. I said it. It's the truth. Bakari Rambo looked better than Ryan Clark.
I think he's going too.
No, Ryan Clark is horrible.
Overboard.
I mean, he's horrible. Larry Fitzgerald, look, every week he's getting embarrassed by somebody. Every freaking week. How many games we played this season? Eight games already? We're 2-6. In every game he's looked bad. Every game. That's all I'm saying. How do you look bad in every game? As a vet, how do you look bad in every freaking game? Like, really? It's stupid. It's dumb.
Well, let's keep. Well,
it's time.
There's nothing else to say. Let's just go to commercial break.
Yeah, exactly. We went to the Bob. Can they regroup? Can they regroup? Not at all. They can regroup in Tampa.
Yeah, you can regroup. It's Tampa.
Yeah, I know, right? I said it was Minnesota last week too. You're right.
Well, yeah, it's Tampa. So you have the opportunity. You know.
You're right. Let's go to commercial break. I'm frustrated. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
So, I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I want to be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Witness all around me, true. But I'm no island, peninsula maybe. Makes no sense, I know crazy. Give up all this that's in my lap, no looking back. Spaceships don't come equipped with rear view mirrors. They dip as quick as they can. The atmosphere is now ripped. I'm so like a pip. I'm glad it's night. So the light from the sun would not burn me on my bum when I shoot the moon. High jump the broom like a preemie out the womb. My partner yelling, don't do it.
How do you hate that song? This song's so great.
Such yeah, man. Song. It's a great song.
R.I.P. Pimp.
R.I.P. Pimp C.
R.I.P. man. Moment of silence real quick. Hold on. All right, we're good. This is the Urban Sports Scene right now. Ready to talk about week 9 of the NFL season. You know, you missed last week. You know, we did the little half, you know, your segment. What is it? The
three things you learned
during the quarter season. You know, I don't even know if I did three things. I think I did like maybe one, but it was the thing that I did do was more of this was referring to the Patriots. Is that you don't mess with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, period. You know, you don't say that they're done, because what they do is once you doubt them, they put up numbers.
I think, and it's obvious to me, but I don't know if other people have figured it out yet. Bill Belichick shows you things in phases. So, you know, during the first quarter of the season, he didn't use a lot of Tim Wright, and he didn't use a lot of Gronk. Now he's using a lot of Gronk. He's showcasing Brandon LaFell a little bit more. Jonas Gray's come off, and even though he didn't do a lot against Denver, he's shown that, okay, now I have that power back to go with Shane Vereen. So, you know, that team, it has a plethora of weapons. They caught Denver off guard.
Sure did.
But that still isn't going to make me change my pick. I still think Denver takes the AFC just because simply for two things. I think well, hopefully, Jack Del Rio learned from his mistakes that he made during this game. And two, Denver has the easier schedule over the second half of the season, so they'll most likely capture home field advantage.
So what would Jack, what does Jack Del Rio need to learn, remember about this game? What does he have to change about this game if they have to see the Patriots again in the postseason?
You need to bracket Gronk.
Okay.
You need to cover him over the top and underneath. You need to use Aqib Talib
on him all day.
I'm not going to say on him. Well, if you use T.J. Ward and one of your linebackers to kind of bracket Gronk, and you put Aqib Talib on maybe a Brandon LaFell, I'll let Julian Edelman beat me underneath all day.
But truth be told, who is Julian Edelman in the grand scheme of things? You're wasting, to me, you wasted Talib on an Edelman. I would put him on Gronk. You take away Brady's main threat. Or, you know, if LaFell's is that dude getting busy, then you put him on LaFell's. But I don't waste I wouldn't waste a corner of Talib's ability on.
Well, excuse me. I put him on Aqib. I put him on Brandon LaFell, and I let Julian Edelman beat. Edelman's only going to catch a pass for like 7-8 yards at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell your linebackers and your DBs to run to the ball.
But I agree with you. I still think, again, the Patriots, the Broncos will probably get home field advantage. If they get home field advantage, the Patriots won't beat the Broncos on the road. To be honest with you, the Broncos, Peyton Manning doesn't do well in New England. It's a fact. On the road in New England, he doesn't do well. But, again, he plays at home. You get him in his confines. When he has his crowd support, you have the defense, you know, obviously going to be amped up with the crowd. And noise will probably affect Tom Brady's offense. Von Miller and DeMarcus and Ware will be able to, rush the pass even more thoroughly because, you know, that noise affects an offense. And so, in my opinion, if they get home field advantage, which they probably will, the Patriots won't beat them. Don't let this game, because it was a blowout. I understand people, we like to go out and anoint people. You're like, oh, yeah, this team is going to be the favorite now. Understand circumstances. This team got beat bad on the road. The New Orleans Saints beat, like, kill teams at home. It happens. That's what happens in the NFL. Certain teams are mega powers at home. This is nothing different. You get Peyton Manning in Denver going against the New England Patriots. I'll put my money on Peyton Manning getting that W. Agree?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the Eagles Texans game. Eagles defeated the Texans, but lost Nick Foles for an extended period of time. Now Mark Sanchez is the quarterback. Can this man lead this team down? What? How many X amount of games they have to play?
Eight.
Is eight games?
I think so. Eight games. I'm not sure. Now we get to see really what Mark Sanchez is. A lot of people were making the argument for Mark Sanchez that, you know, he was a number 4 or 5 pick. So clearly he has some talent. You know, he went to a coach in Rex Ryan who detests offense and didn't want anything to do with the offensive side of the ball. And they never surround him with any offensive weapons, which there's a hint of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
But now you get to see what Mark Sanchez is able to do. Can he lead a team with talent? Because that team has weapons. You know, Zach Ertz, Jeremy Maclin is playing out of his mind. He's making no one miss DeSean Jackson.
DeSean Jackson playing out of his mind, too. Yeah. Don't get wrong. Jerry Maclin is like a number one.
Yeah. And, you know, you have LeSean McCoy. You know, once that offensive line is starting to get healthy, I think Sanchez will be able to at least make these guys split. You know, the game, I'm not coming in. I'm definitely not going to say that Mark Sanchez is going to come in and light it up and make people and start a quarterback controversy in Philadelphia. That's definitely not going to happen. But Chip Kelly had definitely put him in a position to play to his strengths and make him successful.
But is this team – so give me a record what this team can be with a Mark Sanchez in the helm. Right now, what's the record? 6-2? Are they 6-2?
Yeah, they're 6-2 now.
6-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what could they be once Nick Foles comes back? Do they lose about 6 games? I mean, not 6 games. Do they get to like 6 losses?
If they have to go through 6 games with Mark Sanchez,
mm-hmm.
I think he takes them to 3-3.
3-3.
Easy.
3-3. So Mark Sanchez,
Mark Sanchez, 3-3.
So you believe in Mark Sanchez to give you to be 3-3? You believe in him? I can't believe in this dude. His arm strength. For instance, like Nick Foles throws a good deep ball. I don't see Mark Sanchez throwing. He doesn't throw an accurate deep ball.
I think that Chip Kelly puts him in the best position to play to his strengths, okay, which is going to be get play action, mm-hmm, run the ball with create those multiple run lanes with LeSean McCoy, and have Jeremy Maclin extend defense and get the ball to Zach Ertz and, you know, Jordan Matthews and Riley Cooper.
So, this is my thing. So say, LeSean McCoy is taken out of a game, because that probably will happen. Yeah, he did struggle. So say he did, he's taken out of a game. Could you rely on Matt?
If you have Sanchez, to rely on Mark Sanchez to throw the ball 45 times, you are in trouble.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because, you know, Nick Foles, he got in situations where, well, obviously LeSean McCoy couldn't do anything, and
If you're dependent on Mark Sanchez to sling the ball 45 times, then Philadelphia is in trouble.
Okay. Well, let's go down to another game, a game that showed how strong and how thorough the Arizona Cardinals are. Cardinals beat up on the Cowboys. Was it 28-10? Was it?
Yes,
28-10. First, let's go with the Cowboys. Are the Cowboys coming back down to reality?
Of course. What did I tell you?
It's not December yet, though.
No, I said middle of November into December. I told you when everyone else was saying Dallas this, Dallas that, I said middle of November, December, then I'll be able to fully judge them. Although they were out, they were without their star quarterback. Brandon Whedon. He's very limited. You didn't really run the ball that much again this week with
Murray.
DeMarco Murray.
Who didn't get 100 yards.
Yeah, he didn't get 100 yards, didn't get 20-plus carries. So, yes, absolutely, they're coming back to reality. People don't understand. When you have a great running game, that eats up time of possession, mm-hmm, which in turn doesn't put your defense on the field for that long. So then the other team's offense is going to have to press. And that's going to be able, that puts your defense to play a certain style and create turnovers and get sacks. So without that running game, if they aren't going to continue to run the ball, and then have a guy like Romo who can make a play here, a play there for you, this team's going to start to come back to reality, and that defense is going to be exposed.
And that's it. I see this defense. I mean, I see this team is defensively isn't a strong team defensively. Missing Romo, we don't know how many games Romo's going to miss anyway. He may play a comeback in the Jacksonville game, and that may be, you know, if he takes a bad hit in that game, he could be out for the season. The Cowboys come back to reality. The schedule dictates that. They had a nice little schedule, though they did get some key wins. I'm not going to be negative or anything. I'll be honest with you. That win against Seattle, was a big win for them. You look at how their schedule lines up. So they got a tough W against the Seahawks. Then they beat New Orleans in Dallas, which isn't a hard W because we all know New Orleans isn't a good team on the road.
You beat Houston, which is a mediocre team.
The Tennessee Titans, mediocre team. You lost. Pretty much, I want to say all the games. Other than the St. Louis Rams, you came back. You lost all the games to the NFC West. And now you have the Jaguars next, which should be a W. It's in Jacksonville, though Jacksonville has played.
It's in London.
It's in London. I'm sorry, yo. It's in London. With Burrow has been – they have been competitive with Burrow as a quarterback.
But he's a turnover machine.
That's true. So, and the Jaguars do compete. I can say that they do compete.
They do compete, but
it's still a game that you should win. You should win.
I don't think it's unreasonable for anyone to think going into this game that Dallas will not win this game.
But would you have Tony Romo play in this game? Because I don't think I think I'd take my chances with a Brandon Wheaton in this game.
Knowing it's a back injury, but also knowing the history of Dallas, Jerry Jones is probably on pins and needles now. He doesn't want to see this thing deteriorate and go down the drain. He saw the opportunity for him to not just have the NFC East, but to have the NFC and maybe possibly lock up a number one seed for the NFC. Mm-hmm. And Jerry would love nothing more for the playoffs to run through Dallas.
Yeah. So you see Tony Romo.
Absolutely. He's going to meet Mr. Needle, and they're going to numb him up, and he's going to play.
Well, if they'll play a dangerous game with that one, let's go to the Arizona Cardinals. Can you legitimately see the Arizona Cardinals representing the NFC in the Super Bowl?
No.
And explain why.
Well, number one reason is Carson Palmer. He's your starting quarterback. Number two, this isn't a team that offensively makes that you have that's going to anyone's going to keep you up at night game planning for. Now, Andre Ellington has world class speed out of the backfield. Larry Fitzgerald has shown he's still a crafty veteran. You have Michael Floyd, and you have the two Brown guys. So there are some pieces, but to me, is they're doing this all through scheme. From, you know, Bruce Arians, a guy who comes up with great schemes to put his players in the best position possible. And also, they're doing it by not turning the ball over on offense. And you're not going to be able to play mistake-free football with Carson Palmer for that long, especially if the pass rush starts to get to him.
All right, so I'm going to tell you, yes, I think this team legitimately could be could represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. And I think we should give Carson Palmer more credit. I mean, we're talking about a guy that let's look at his career in Cincy. You know, when he had Chad Johnson, TJ Hootsmanzada, TJ Hootsmanzada. Those guys, you would think at first, initially, like those guys, you know, were top of the line wide receivers, right? Without Carson Palmer, what have they ever been?
That's very true.
Yes, and now we go obviously Oakland. Everybody sucks in Oakland. It's Oakland. All right, the infrastructure in Oakland is terrible. Then he goes from Oakland to a team that had some structure, had a number one wide receiver in Larry Fitzgerald, a young up and coming wide receiver in Michael Floyd, and he's made them look good. Last season they went 10-6. This season we don't even know how good the record could be.
Yeah, they'll go anywhere. Most likely to me they'll. Just looking at the rest of their schedule, probably 12-4.
Yeah, I feel like just looking back on his career, and I had to actually think about Cincinnati and what happened to him in Cincinnati. I feel like his career has been like, actually, they've underrated his career.
Post the knee, I think prior to the knee surgery, yeah. People were talking about him the same way people were talking about Andrew Luck.
Of course.
But then after the knee surgery, he hasn't been the same.
And even the elbow situation. Yeah. The elbow situation is probably worse than the knee situation because the elbow, he's lost, obviously, power in that arm. But when you look at him, like if you look at his career, you think to yourself, like, all right, Chad Johnson was one of the best wide receivers in football. Not like a top, not a, you know, number one. He was one of the best wide receivers in football. You know, some people even thought that TJ Hootsmanzada was better than. In some circles, thought T.J. Hootsmanzada was just as good as Chad Johnson. In some circles, would say he was more of a go-to person in that offense than Chad Johnson. He leaves. He's gone. These guys aren't even relevant. You saw T.J. Hootsmanzada go to Baltimore, wasn't even the same dude. Chad Johnson was still trying to find a home in other venues, Miami, Patriots. So to me, it's like we need to appreciate Carson Palmer as a quarterback, as a very, very good quarterback. A lot of times we look at him and say, oh, it's just Carson Palmer. No, this dude went to Arizona and made this team that was desperate for a quarterback, was desperate for good quarterback play, 10-6, and like you said now, is on the, you know, on the projection to probably finish 12-4 or 13-3.
Well, he was the number one pick for a reason. He won the Heisman.
Did he win the Heisman that year? I don't think he won the Heisman.
Oh, I don't think I could be wrong.
But, you know, he was up there. He was a candidate. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure.
You know, so he had an acclaimed career for certain reasons. He had some, you know, acclaim that was much earned for certain reasons. But ultimately, it hasn't really clicked in the professional ranks. So. Jerry, you know, he could go on another great late career run and change how everyone looks at him. But for now, he's just Carson Palmer.
Let's go to another game on week nine. The week nine docket. The Rams defeat the Niners. What's wrong with the 49ers right now?
The infighting in that front office and between the coach and the GM.
And that's why the team's struggling?
You think
it's trickling down?
I think it's starting to trickle down. Also, you lose guys on that defense like Alden Smith, Navarro Bowman, and Patrick Willis. That's three all pros right there. You know, then the lack of talent at the cornerback position. You mix that in, and you know, it's a recipe for disaster. This team was created with the physical run game and a thumping defense, and they just haven't. It's just not there this year. So, for whatever reason it is, but if there's any coach I have confidence in, I think that Jim Harbaugh can definitely fix it. They're 4-4 right now. Eight more games. I wouldn't be surprised if Jim pulled it off and those guys go 11.
Jim did what?
Pulls it off. And those guys go something like 11-5 or 10-6 and able to sneak into the playoffs.
You know, I love Jim Harbaugh. I think he's doing a bad job in terms of coaching this team. And just losing their identity. You look at the numbers. I mean, Gore was under 20 in rushing attempts. Hyde had limited touches. I think Gore was like gashing him. Gore had maybe averaged like 3.4. I think 3.4 yards a carry. I think Hyde maybe been up 8. And you continue to rely on Kaepernick, who threw the ball for like 33 times. My God, this team. We keep saying it. This team is efficient and they win games. When they run the ball, stop relying on Kaepernick and trying to make Kaepernick this quarterback. Feature your best outcome to win. That is Gore and Hyde. Truth be told, featuring Gore more. We've all watched Gore over the last some odd years. He's the kind of running back that you need to feed. You need to feed him, and eventually he gashes you for that big run. You know what I mean? He's a guy who will wear down the defense. Feed the beast. Stop trying to feature Kaepernick. When you continually try to feature Kaepernick, this is what happens. You struggle against teams that you're supposed to beat. And that's what happened here.
Yeah, it's a game that they should have won. You know, Colin Kaepernick says on that last play that he did cross the goal line with the football. You know, we do see in the replay that the football came out. But to me personally, I don't even see why you were in that position. You know, you give the ball to Frank Gore. He doesn't get through. You call a timeout, then you kick the field goal. Or if not, you run like a sprint right with Kaepernick. Put the ball in his hand. Tell him either touchdown or throw it out the back of the end zone. But at least give us 1 second left to kick a field goal.
So if they don't make the playoffs, is Jim Harbaugh gone?
If the rumors are true and there really is a power struggle between the GM and the head coach, a decision to be made, and, you know, most likely they may, even though I don't see why they would, but most likely they may make the decision to stay with Trent Baalke just because of Jim Harbaugh's personality. He seems like the type of guy that has a personality that wears on you.
It's a terrible thing. I would love to have
But trust me, if he's let go out of his contract,
Michigan.
Not only Michigan, but any other team in the NFL that's looking to win, the guy to reverse the culture and make you into a winner. So
yeah, I'm all for the Redskins firing Jay Gruden and hiring Jim Harbaugh. That too. Damn. Either or.
No loyalty at all.
I ain't loyal. I'm only loyal to results. That's okay. Money. That's money, my friends, family. I don't know Jay Gruden. He ain't my friend. And he ain't paying me.
Okay.
So I ain't loyal to you. Anyways, with Ravens Steelers, you saw the game?
Yeah, I did.
All right, thoughts of that game. Give me some thoughts about that game.
I don't think anyone in their wildest dream would have thought Ben Roethlisberger would have thrown 6 touchdowns 2 weeks in a row.
No, me either.
I didn't see that one coming. I thought
with Haley too?
Yeah, with Todd Haley. I thought he would, I'm not gonna say struggle, but maybe throw like 2 touchdowns. I didn't see 6 touchdowns coming. Another loss for the Ravens, but I still think that this team is one of the upper echelon teams in the AFC.
The Ravens or the Steelers?
The Ravens, in my opinion.
Right now, they're last place in the division.
I mean, they're last, but I still think they're one of the upper echelon. They're built to win in November and in December. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, for now, Mike Tomlin is off that hot seat that he was on, that I said he was on a couple weeks ago.
He's off.
Yeah, he's off the hot seat for now. You know, they have to continue winning and probably grab the AFC North for him to really sleep at night good, you know, towards the end of December.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. Like, I saw the game. Like you said, I can't believe the Big Ben threw for like 6 touchdowns back-to-back weeks. I mean, Antonio Brown is a beast in the open field, man. That dude is something special.
Open field, anywhere. Antonio Brown is just he's a dog. Yeah. And then you couple him with Le'Veon Bell.
Bryant now.
Martavius Bryant.
And Wheaton.
And Wheaton. You know, that's a pretty formidable starting trio of wide receivers. They look like the offensive line is improving. They brought back James Harrison and Brett Kiesel to give that defense a little bit, to give them a little bit of nasty, a little bit of oomph. And you know, maybe they make a late run to, you know, improve their fortunes and make it to capture the AFC title. AFC North division title.
Okay, but you still think the Ravens can make the playoffs though, even though because their schedule looks like it's getting a little tougher.
Absolutely. I think Torrey Smith needs to step up. I think Torrey Smith needs to. I'm not gonna say he's not earning his check, but he needs to get it. He needs to bring more to the table. You know, not just as a vertical threat, you know, but getting open. He runs pretty good routes, but you know,
he runs a great go route.
He runs a great go route and a great post route.
Yeah, there you go.
But he needs to get more involved in the intermediate and underneath passing game. Can't just rely on Steve Smith and Owen Daniels and those three running backs.
Yeah, the Ravens are in trouble. You got the Browns, the Bengals. These teams are playing good ball. But, yeah, I'm with Will. I think they could obviously get past the Browns. The Browns, I think that's a team they can get past. They already took the game in Cleveland. So they have the upper hand. Cleveland has come back, have to play in Baltimore. So they have the upper hand against Cleveland. They split with the Steelers. The Bengals took 2. So they're behind. They have to play strong play. Because in my opinion, the way the Steelers are playing ball right now, they'll be hard to beat. And this is like a team that can take this game on the road and play this at home. Because, again, they have a running game. The defense looks meaner, like you mentioned, with Harrison. And what's the name of the dude they brought with the beard?
That you Brent mentioned Kiesel.
Kiesel. Shazer. I don't think Shazer's going to be out for so long.
No.
So this team is going to be dangerous. This team is going to be very dangerous. It's going to be hard for the Ravens to jump both those teams. But we'll see. Only time will tell. So, Big Ben, could this be a MVP season for him? You're talking about 6 touchdowns.
No.
You don't think so?
No. He throws another 5 more this week, then I'm possibly. Do they play this week? Yeah, they play this week.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I got to look it up.
If he throws another 4 or 5, then definitely he puts himself in a running. But no, not yet. Not just yet.
So who's the top? Who's the front runner right now?
If you had to ask me, Andrew Luck. You take him away from that team, and they are garbage. Even though they have a lot of weapons, guys that are producing, you take Andrew Luck away from the Colts, that team is garbage.
Oh, yeah, we already know that. And we saw what Luck did to the Giants yesterday. Something totally cool. But anyway, we're going to mention week 9 picks. Will was here last week, but Al was here. Al and myself went 3-2. We picked from the Saints-Panthers game. Both of us picked the Panthers, which we were wrong. Cardinals-Cowboys, we both picked the Cardinals. Broncos-Patriots, we both picked the Broncos, which was wrong. Ravens-Steelers, we both picked the Steelers. And Colts versus Giants, we both picked the Colts. Yes, right. Okay, make sure I was wrong. Yeah, okay, I'm right. And my overall record right now is I'm 21-18. Will is 16-15. Will's back in the helm. He's ready to go. Week 10 picks, Browns versus Bengals.
Give me the Browns.
Give me the Bengals. Game's in Cincy. I'm going to go with the Bengals Thursday night. Niners versus Saints in New Orleans.
My head tells me go with the Saints. My heart's telling me go with the Niners.
Same here. Same here.
Going with the Saints.
Going with the physical team. Always go with the physical team. Saints are playing. They play good ball at home. I'm going to go with the Niners. I just think they're going to pound Frank Gore. That don't sound right.
It doesn't. Not at all.
Frank Gore can get a lot of touches. That sounds better, right?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Frank Gore can get a lot of touches. All right. Bears versus Packers.
Give me the Packers.
Give me the Packers. Panthers versus the Eagles.
Give me the Panthers.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Panthers in this one. They need this game big time just so they can stay afloat because they're right now behind the Saints. So I'm going to go with the Panthers. Fantasy football. Week 9 fantasy football picks. Al picked Percy Harvin, which was a good pick. I picked the Washington Redskins defense because they were going against the Minnesota Vikings. And obviously, it was a terrible pick. Let's go for Week 10 fantasy football picks. Will T.
I think Julio Jones gets out of that rut he's been in thus far this season, becomes just that explosive wide receiver that we all thought he could be. I'm going with Julio Jones.
See, Julio Jones. I am going to go that Roddy White. I'm going to go with Roddy White. I was going to do that one. Let's see. You know what? I said Jordan Reed before already. You know what? Here we go. Yeah, I know. He's back. No, he's not playing this week. I can't use RG3. It sucks. He's going to buy. Dang. Who am I going to pick? Who am I going to pick? Okay, I don't have him, but I'm going to go with it. He's playing against the Eagles. The Eagles run defense is it's good. Eagles run defense is good?
Not really,
right? All right, cool. I'm going to go with D'Angelo Williams. I'm going to go with D'Angelo Williams. I think he'll have a good game this week. The Panthers need this game. The best way they win games is their running game. So I'm going to go with the Panthers. I mean, go with D'Angelo Williams. Anyways, time for another commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the NBA, which we call Megas NBA. It's a tribute to our homie Big Ron, who passed away in July. So it's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
Let me see your bounce right and left and let you show. Hey, let you show. Yeah, just let you show. Hey, get it right. Just step and let you show. Hey, let you show. Hey, just let you show. Hey, let me see your bounce right and left and let you show. Hey, let you show. Hey, let you show. Hey, get it right. Just step and let you show. Yeah, let you show. Hey, let you show.
Oh, hey, throw. I'm clean. I'm finna show the lean in it. Call me 15 in it. This grand hustle team of kings is getting rich. I lean and
show
the lean.
It's my song. All right, it's Megas NBA again. Thanks to the folks who've been tuning in. The number is, well, if you want to call in, the number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Right now we're talking about the Washington Wizards. Right now the Wizards are playing the Knicks tonight. The Wizards are up 58-56. The highest score right now for the Washington Wizards is Paul Pierce. He's 4-for-9 from the field. You know the truth. The truth will let you loose out here, man. So let's go with that game, Will. Let's talk about the game a little bit before we get into the topic of Otto Porter, second-year player for the Washington Wizards. Is this a game that's, you know, feasible for them to win? Both teams are 2-1. The Wizards are up 3 right now. If they win this game, do you see them feeling pretty good about their season, knowing that Bradley Beal is out?
I think to get off to a 3-1 start without Bradley Beal, your second best player, you have to feel a little bit more comfortable. Even though I will say those first two victories against, you know, Orlando and Milwaukee really don't say a lot, because no one's really sees either one of those teams being very strong. But you have to feel comfortable if you get off to a 3-1 start. And I think that's what the better teams in this league do. They get off to a good start, and that gives them that momentum going forward, especially missing your key, your starting two guard. So you gotta feel comfortable about you gotta feel good about that.
Yeah, I think in my opinion, you know, losing Bradley Beal for the 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 to 8 weeks.
Regardless of the fact, we're not looking at the when you look at the Wizards, you look at the Wizards as a strong team because they have a Bradley Beal. Now, Bradley Beal's not in the lineup. You're looking at them as a beatable team. To play in Madison Square Garden, a team that just beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland in LeBron's big game and win.
And they beat Charlotte, a really good Charlotte Hornets team.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
I mean, they beat Charlotte Hornets. That's a team that's going to
People talk about them too high. They talk because they got Lance Stevenson. Why do people talk about them about the Charlotte Hornets so hard? Because they signed Lance Stevenson.
I mean, you signed Lance Stevenson,
a crazy idiot.
Well, you signed Lance Stevenson, a guy who does it all. He's a really good wing defender.
Yeah, he's a great street ball player, man.
He's good at creating shots for himself and others on the team. Now, if you can rein in Kemba Walker, get Kemba Walker to be more efficient, you'll have something. You know what I mean? If you get Kemba Walker to be more efficient with the ball handling and, you know, from his shot selection, that increases you. That gets you like three to five wins, just that on his own, in my opinion.
My man. It's like really hyping the Charlotte Hornets.
Watch what I tell
the
you.
Don't worry, the Knicks are. I believe in the Knicks. Knicks are a good team. I'm not gonna give Kemba Walker any credit.
This Knicks, I've seen every one of their games this year, mm-hmm. Because I'm a fan of the Knicks and the Washington Wizards. I'll go on the record and say that. I love both of them. You know what I mean?
The Yankees and Nats, the Knicks and Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of my youth in the New York, New Jersey area.
What's up, man? I appreciate that, man. I like Jersey too.
Yeah, different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons. Obviously, different reasons.
What was I saying? This is a team that even though they've shown some signs, they still have a long way to go in that triangle offense. You know, players are still figuring out how to play in that triangle offense and play off each other. Specifically, J.R. Smith. Jesus Christ.
yeah, I'm waiting for him to get traded.
Yeah, Amari Stoudemire has looked very good.
Looked good.
Those red wine baths he's taken have helped his knees.
Yeah.
Nah, I never would have thought it. Yeah. You know, in his last season, when he's making in the last season of a insane contract.
Oh, you mean
a 20? Well, he's getting paid like 22 plus million.
Yeah, so you calling it red wine? Is that what you're calling it?
Well, no,
I call it last year your contract.
Yeah,
play.
I think that has something to do with it also. But you know, he's playing ball. I'm not going to say he looked like the Amari Stoudemire that he was in Phoenix, playing with Steve Nash when he was dunking over any and everybody. But he's looked really good. He's looked really good. He shocked the hell out of me. So, you know, that gives you a lot of hope if you're a Knicks fan.
Yeah, big up to the Knicks, man. Hopefully the Wizards beat the Knicks. I would love to see see that W for the Wizards. I'm a big John Wall fan. John Wall, I think this is a year for John Wall. I feel like obviously last season was a year for John Wall to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to show you that I can lead a team to the playoffs. Now I'm going to show you that I'm probably in that list of one of the best point guards in the NBA.
He's already in that list. I mean, just
well, you know what I mean. I think every year he sets a new goal for himself. You know, I didn't make the Olympic team. You know what I mean? Like Kyrie Irving, yeah. You have Kyrie over me. Derrick Rose is obvious to me. Derrick Rose, Derrick Rose. But you have Kyrie over me. I'm gonna show you why that I'm just as good as a Kyrie Irving.
I think if he really really commits to locking down his man on defense, he takes his game to a whole nother level. And he improves that efficiency with that jump shot. Takes his game to another level.
I think he can play defense. But to me, when he wants to, he's the best defensive point guard. Best defensive star point guard in the game. I'll put it that way. The best defensive star point guard in the game. When he really wants a lockdown.
There's a guy in Boston who you really don't like.
No, I think he's just as good as Rondo. Just as good. Even better, to be honest with you.
On the defensive end?
If John Wall wants to... Easily, if he wants to, I'm not saying consistent. I'm saying if he wants to, if John Wall says, you know what, I'm gonna put that because I seen in Kentucky, that dude on the ball is a beast. Rondo's good in passing lanes, but that dude on the ball is a beast, like a beast.
Rondo's
he's okay on the ball. He's okay.
Yeah, he's better than okay.
He ain't driving no Chris. I've seen people give him the business. Chris Paul gives him the business. Like Derrick Rose eats him. certain people, he do all right, but he gets eaten. And plus, he's coming up. I haven't seen him after the knee injury, so I can't even tell you how he's played defensively after the knee injury. Let's go to, I mentioned him, you know, last year he was a rookie. People called him a bust. You know, a lot of people call him a bust. Otto Porter, he's playing good ball now.
Where the hell did this come from? That's all I want to know.
I'm gonna let you go first.
No,
you have things to say. I'm gonna let you go first.
No, I want to know where the hell did this come from. You know, I know that he had you can make the argument that players usually make their largest jump from their rookie year to their second year. But if he showed these things in practice last year, and you had a guy, Trevor Ariza, who played his best season that I've seen Trevor Ariza had in the NBA. My question is, why didn't Otto Porter get a little bit more burn, and then you get something for Trevor Ariza? Because ultimately, in the long term, that helps this team sustain or takes you to another level. Mm-hmm. But once again, we're talking about Ernie Grunfeld as the GM. So that's why it didn't happen.
But why not talk about Randy Whitman for not playing Otto Porter? I've always said
But that's the thing, though. If you're the GM, you're Randy Whitman's boss.
I got you. No, I know what you're saying, but it still goes hand in hand. Maybe he's getting him control. We always talk about how in other organizations, the coaches should be able to manage the talent on the court or the field. Let the coaches coach.
And I understand that, but you have scouts, and I'm pretty sure that Ernie Grunfeld was at a lot of practices and shoot around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eventually you're going to pull Randy Whitman to the side and say, hey, you know, what's the deal?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here? And if he says, oh, I don't think he's ready, you say, well, how can we tell until we put him in live game action? You know what I mean? You can't tell me that just a summer and then, you know, having a full summer in the NBA and playing in the summer league, that's the reason for this improvement.
Yeah.
That's not the reason for it.
It's not at all.
It's not. I don't know where it's come from. Maybe it was there all along. But I'm not going to, you know, I definitely think he stirred off of the bust talk thus far because, you know, he's shown that.
He's hitting double figures almost every night off the bench.
The talent that he showed at Georgetown, you know, as the Big East Player of the Year, and, you know, that kind of high basketball IQ and multifaceted dimensions of his game, you know, with playing defense, passing, rebounding. He's shown all of that as the backup, the six-man for the Wizards.
Yeah, and it's amazing because, you know, first off, if you looked at summer league, looked at preseason, you would say, okay, this position would probably be as a six-man would be Glenn Rice Jr. Glenn Rice Jr. looked phenomenal in preseason and summer league. But it's amazing now as the season has started, you know, you see Otto Porter putting in numbers. Again, to me, and we both play basketball, you cannot substitute and ignore a man with a great basketball IQ. You know, I mean, there's people out here who are just raw talent. I mean, wrong. And they're not in the league anymore. Like Michael Beasley's one, raw talent, but the IQ isn't there. A guy like Otto Porter, you watch in Georgetown, this is a guy who was smart enough to do everything. So it always baffled me, okay, that this guy can't see the court. This guy is an intelligent basketball player. That's why Shane Battier has been in the league for X amount of years, because he's a smart basketball player. He's not the most athletic player in the world. He's not a guy who can go ISO. He's a guy who understands his game and makes the right basketball play when you need it. Otto Porter is the same way. So it amazed me that, you know, he couldn't touch the court on a young Wizards team that didn't have – not everybody, everybody on that team wasn't intelligent. You had some skilled guys. I mean, you had some skilled guys, some guys who were blessed with God-given ability, but intelligence as a basketball player, not all of them had that. So I always was wondered why Randy Whitman couldn't touch the floor for Randy Whitman's roster or team. It just amazed me. Now,
or maybe Randy Whitman thought that the last year's Wizards team was that great.
Maybe. I don't know. But also, maybe I have to look at Otto Porter. Maybe it was like, okay, you know, maybe he didn't play well. Maybe he was like, okay, you know what, I got to reexamine myself and show that I could really play at this game at a high level. Maybe things have slowed down for him. You know, just like it's in football, basketball, anything, when you play professional sports compared to the college game, everything is so fast. So you have to slow it down for yourself. Maybe that happened. I remember listening to Gortat speak about Otto Porter. He was saying, like, in the offseason, like, if you see how this kid works, you know, like, he's going to be a really, really good basketball player down the road. You already know. Like, in practice, he said this about him in practice. So to get to your point is that the player saw something about Otto Porter already in practice. So I don't know why he couldn't touch the court. They saw this already because he was talking about how if we lose Trevor Ariza, I'm confident that Otto Porter will be good. Because he said we've seen this in practice. So let you know that this is something the players already saw about Otto Porter anyway.
Yeah, obviously the talent was there. He was the number three pick. You know, I've gone on record and said that I thought that, you know, if you're going to have a player, you know, if the choice between him and Norlens Noel and they were going to kind of be redshirted, I would have took Norlens Noel.
Yeah.
Because I just think long term that would have been the best fit for you. A shot blocking 7-footer who could protect the rim.
I hear you.
But, you know, Otto Porter's shown a lot. You know, hopefully he's able to sustain this over a season and, you know, help take this Wizards team to that 50 wins I predicted.
And don't worry about it, Otto Porter, at the same time, you know, this guy, Kevin Durant's like aiming to come down here, so you won't be hearing that long anywhere. That's how I look at it. He won't be here that long. He'll be going somewhere. He won't be a Wizard anymore. He'll be somewhere because they're already politic on that low anyway. Could he start over Paul Pierce down the road?
He has the ability to. Should he? No. I don't think he should. Paul Pierce gives you another guy who can create a shot for himself and others on the floor in that first unit. Most likely when Otto Porter's coming off the bench, he's going to be, you know, depending on how Randy Whitman works the rotation, he'll be on the floor with Bradley Beal. So, you know, those two guys together with that second unit, I don't think there are a lot of second teams, you know, depending on how teams work their rotations, a lot of second teams that could deal with those two guys offensively. But no, Paul Pierce, he came here to give you great leadership and help. He's not the piece that's going to put you over the top, but he came here to be one of those guys to show you how to prepare and take this team to the next level. So I don't think you want to put him on the bench at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think right now he's having success in the six-man role. When young players just continue to do the same thing, add on to his confidence, and maybe down to Remy next season, he's a starter. But at this point of year, this season, he's having confidence. He has confidence. He's comfortable. Keep him in this role, and we'll see how it pans out. You know, in the next couple of months to see how Otto Porter's game has progressed. But let's go into the NBA season. Let's get into the meat of the NBA season. And to update folks, the Wizards are up 72-60 right now. They're up 12 and going to the fourth quarter. So Wizards may win this game in Madison Square Garden, which is impressive. Early season. In the early beginning of the NBA, what teams or players have surprised you so far?
Player that surprised me, and it's only because I'm not going to even say surprised me, but he's getting the opportunity to show what he can do offensively. Perry Jones III.
Stole my answer. Stole it.
We don't understand why he hasn't been given the opportunity to show what he can do offensively. I thought that if they had developed him and brought him along last year against the San Antonio Spurs, maybe that team's back in the finals. Maybe the Spurs aren't in the final and we're seeing OKC. But that goes to Scott Brooks' rotations and what
terrible.
He's done.
He's just terrible.
What he's doing. You know, they've done a good job at developing the players, but it's just getting them the opportunity and having the confidence in them to really show what they can do during long stretches for OKC. I think if he went 9 deep in his bench, there's no one that could beat OKC, not even the Spurs.
Seriously. I totally agree with you. You see Perry Jones III. I'm pissed off that Lamb is hurt. Like, you would get to see him get out too. Like, Perry Jones III, this is a guy that coming out of high school is one of the better players in the nation.
He was top 5.
In the nation. Right, played well. I mean, he played well in Baylor, but the whole thing of him in Baylor was he didn't have that dog in him to take over games. That was the thing about him. The talent was always there. Like, the talent was there, and so when you look at him in OKC, he doesn't have to be the dog, right? You have Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. So you're thinking to yourself like, oh, he should play and he should be fine because now he'll be a complimentary piece to what they do. And I'm sitting here like, oh, DNP. There isn't anybody other than, and I'm being straight real with you, other than Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and, okay, Serge Ibaka because he's good at defense, and maybe Lamb, that is better than this kid, more, that is more as talented as this kid, period.
Yeah, I mean, he has the offensive tools. you know, his length, athleticism, ball handling, shooting. So he has the tools to be a difference maker for you. Mm-hmm. Now, why you haven't given him the opportunity to do it, I don't know if it's practice habits, from a mental standpoint, his preparation, or when he's on the floor, does he, you know, we've seen when he's given a green light what he could do. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what it is. It's kind of perplexing to me, you know, why, you know, just when given a green light, he could do this and you've never kind of given him the opportunity during previous seasons to, you know, make a longer, to extend your playoff run. But he's definitely been the guy that's been the biggest surprise for me thus far.
Another guy who surprised me is Chris Bosh. I mean, we've seen Toronto Chris Bosh. This is something totally, this is awesome. Like, at first I was trying to think about who would be the face, well, not the face, who would be the go-to player for this team. I was leaning toward Dwayne Wade, because Dwayne Wade is, to me, it's been the alpha dog on that team. It's Miami Heat. He's an alpha dog type of personality, period. But Chris Bosh came this thing, and when Eric Spoelstra said, like, this is your team, he really meant it. Like, we're going to make a run to offense through Chris Bosh. He really meant it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm surprised so much for the single point that while LeBron was there, you saw glimpses when they ran the offense through him, mm-hmm, on the high post, and they just didn't make him sit over in the left corner and shoot threes off of pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. But Chris Bosh is definitely having a strong season. That Miami team, they came out undefeated during the first week of the season. A lot of people thought that Miami would go 0-3. I didn't think that, because
I stated,
you, if you're Eric Spoelstra, you win back-to-back championships and go to four straight NBA finals, you have to be a pretty good coach.
Yeah, I think he's not great. I don't think he's a good coach.
I've never said he's a great coach, but I think he's he's out of 32 teams, he's probably in the top
10?
Top 12 coaches. 12. Yeah.
I mean, he's having don't get me wrong, he's definitely showing
but
me
it's
a
still,
lot.
It's still early.
He's showing
still
me a early. Lot. The teams he did beat have been impressive. I mean, they beat the Wizards. I thought the Wizards were a good team. I mean, I think the Wizards are a good team. Don't get me wrong. Even when they didn't have everybody. I think Nene didn't play in that game, right? He got suspended.
Yeah. Nene, right? And DeJuan Blake.
Yeah, so they still beat him. Chris Bosh had a good game. So, I mean, but Chris Bosh has looked really good. Right now, Dwayne Wade has 19. Chris Bosh has 14. They're playing the Houston Rockets, and the Houston Rockets are up 10 in the third quarter. But in the end of the day, I mean, this is a guy who's back to getting 20 and 10 again. That's the thing. It's the 10 part. He's getting 20 and 10. He's scoring and rebounding again. When LeBron was there, he wasn't even rebounding anymore.
And that goes to show that the statement that he made about playing with LeBron and the adjustment that Kevin Love is going to make, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen that, you know, people call, you know, for all the criticism that he received, I still knew that Chris Bosh could be a very effective and one of the better players in the league if given the opportunity. But he really had to augment his game to fit in and play with LeBron James, which, and as he's shown, when given the opportunity, what he can do. Mm-hmm. And now Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, as you've seen, Kyrie is struggling a little bit having to play off the ball with LeBron.
True, it's true.
So it's an adjustment period, and I think anyone who was kind of taken back by Chris Bosh's statements, I don't think it was any malice intent,
mm-hmm,
when he made the statement. It was just the truth.
Yeah, I totally agree. But then another team that I thought that would look good was a team that surprised me, the Dallas Mavericks. They look pretty good.
Rick Carlisle is one of the better. He's one of the five better coaches in the league.
I
think as long as they have him and they, you know, they give him some talent, that team's always going to be in contention for a playoff spot.
I think the addition of Tyson Chandler has helped this team, and also Chandler Parsons has been good for this team.
Overpaid.
Who, Chandler Parsons?
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. But still a good addition though. It's a nice addition, but it's overpaid though. I totally agree with you though. All right. Let's go to the Lakers. The Lakers. I love talking about the Lakers. One of my favorite teams in history of basketball. If the Lakers right now are like 0-3 or 0-4, they're 0-3, I believe. If the Lakers finish with one of the worst records in the NBA, does this hurt Kobe Bryant's legacy?
I don't think it hurts his legacy. I think that he knows already, because you can see in the way he's playing. You saw opening night with him trying to antagonize Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
Then the overly aggressive foul on Eric Bledsoe.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, if I'm miserable, I'm going to make other people miserable. He's like that little kid who they sit over in the corner and, you know, in school and, you know, in like kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And he's miserable over there and he's trying to get other people in trouble by throwing paper at him and talking loud to him. So Kobe's trying to bring others down to his level because he really knows that, you know, some will make the statement that, you know, he shouldn't have gone for the money grab and taking the $24 million. Mm-hmm. But me personally, I say get as much as you can. But you have to know that with that, you possibly make this team take a step back because you aren't able to add the necessary pieces. So I think he's kind of trolling, if that's the right word. That's the word that people – he's trolling. He's trying to bring people down to his miserable level because he knows this team. I thought that this team would win 30 games. I don't even see that. I see them winning 18, maybe 22 games.
This team is pathetic. It's a pathetic team. It is, man. It's like, you know, growing up a Lakers fan and watching, you know, the yellow and purple for, you know, they call it the purple and gold for years. This is like, it's just a bad state in Lakers basketball. And my problem with it is people value Kobe more than they value the organization. Like, think of the organization. Like, really, if you're a Lakers fan, that's why I know there's Lakers fans and there's just Kobe fans. Like, understand this organization for what it is. This organization is a championship-run organization. It's not an organization. It's like, okay, let's just get to the playoffs. This is a championship-run organization. And with Kobe Bryant over the last couple of years, we have had to put ourselves in a situation where we're just getting role players with Kobe Bryant and thinking that's a championship, not a championship team. Let's make Kobe Bryant happy. Let's make him be the focal point of the team, and let's see if we can rock that way. No, this team is about stacking your team and winning championships. Like the Yankees. The Yankees aren't getting B-rated players, period. Normally, they're trying to get a couple superstars to make sure they're the favorites to win a championship. That's the Lakers. That's the Lakers way. All right? That's the way I am accustomed to watching my team. You know what I mean? We get to a point where we're up and coming. We're a great team. You know what? Screw that. We're going to make that move to make us a championship team. We were up and coming with Eddie Jones, Nick Van Exel, Cedric Ceballos, Vlade Divac, Eldon Campbell. We were up and coming.
Sindel 3.
We were up and coming with that team. That team knocked out Seattle with Sean Kemp, with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp in the first round, went in the second round, lost to, I believe, San Antonio or Utah. I can't remember. Knocked that and lost to that team. But after that, they was like, you know what? We're up and coming. Scratch that. We getting Shaq. We want to be a championship team. We don't want to be an up and coming team. Now I'm watching this team, and they're content with being terrible. Content.
Well, I don't know if you and Al talked about the interview that Jenny Buss. Well,
she. Oh no, said, we ain't talk about her. We ain't talk about her.
Yeah, the interview she had. She said that her brother has a plan, like a 3-year plan. So she's going to let the plan play out. She's going to be patient. She knows that there's going to be some bruises and bumps along the way. So, what that plan is?
You know what the plan is, though, right? I'm going to do it first, though.
What, tank?
It's to make, all right, this is what it is.
Well, because
it's the article. You probably saw the article.
I saw the article you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Unless you, I think, are in the top five, mm-hmm. you don't get your draft pick this year. It goes to Phoenix.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of hard pressed to see exactly what it is you're going to be able to do, because just that Lakers as a franchise has lost its luster, and it all started with Dwight Howard, probably the biggest clown in the NBA, not wanting to join your franchise, not wanting to be the centerpiece going forward for your franchise. How does a guy like that, who likes the spotlight, who wants to be in front of the cameras, not want to be in LA to be the next icon for the Lakers?
It's a common denominator. It's not that complicated. It really isn't. Regardless of what it is, he didn't want to be there because of Kobe Bryant. Kobe fans are going to want to, like, oh, well, he wasn't cut up. He was soft. He was this, that, and the other. Screw that. You keep Dwight Howard. Regardless of he's soft, he's going to bring other players to L.A.
So, it was one of those things, like, you made the decision to keep Kobe and kind of jettison Shaq. So you should have made the decision to keep Dwight Howard and jettison Kobe.
And that's the thing. My issue is like this is what Buster's doing. He doesn't want bad press, right? He signed Kobe to that big extension. So basically, his 3-year plan, what it is like, we're going to wait till Kobe leaves. That's his plan. We're going to wait till Kobe leaves, and then we can adjust to anything. He wants to make sure that Kobe's out of LA. Once Kobe's contract is out, the plan will be up there, and you'll see for what it is.
It'll accelerate, yeah, because then you have Julius Randle, and then if you suck enough, you'll have a top five pick.
And then you'll get a player that you want to come to LA.
And then the salary cap goes up.
Exactly. They have a plan. It's called post-Kobe plan. It's called the post-Kobe plan.
Yeah.
But see, my thing is, my question, do you think there are any takers? If you were Lakers, would you consider trading Kobe Bryant? If you could trade Kobe Bryant.
Well, Kobe's one of the few players that has a no-trade clause. So unless it's where he wants to go, you can't move him. But I'll say this, and I put a lot of thought into this because I thought that you would ask this. Well, I saw it on the outline. Amari Stoudemire makes $22 million in the last year of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe, I think, even after this year, still has 2 years and $48 million. If you're the Knicks, you want to make a splash to keep Melo happy. Kobe knows the triangle very well.
Yes.
Do you, if you're the Knicks in your field, and Phil knows, so there are guys around that can make Kobe comfortable. He's always said that Derek Fisher's been his favorite teammate. Phil Jackson, he considers him like a father figure. Do you trade Amari Stoudemire and another piece for Kobe to come to New York, team him with Carmelo, and then you try to add a third piece to that puzzle and get this Knicks team to become competitive and able to compete for a championship in the East?
If you think it's going to make you competitive, make the move. If I'm LA, I'm taking it in a second, though.
Most definitely.
If I'm LA
and the Knicks offer Amari Stoudemire, Shane Larkin, and
Tim Hardaway Jr.
If I'm the Lakers, I take that. I don't even think twice about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have
I don't know how you broach the subject with a guy who some people say is a egomaniac to the infinite power.
Mm-hmm.
How do you broach the subject of trading him? But if the Knicks throw that offer to me, I take it in a second, and I don't look back.
Of course not. And he's gone. He's gone from Lakerland. I'm taking that deal, and I think you make two people happy. You make Kobe Bryant happy, and you make the Lakers happy.
Yeah, because Kobe, he gets to play with Carmelo, and both of them said they wanted to play together.
Mm-hmm.
He's back under Phil. He's around the guy who's coach. Derek Fisher's coaching him, and that's his favorite teammate of all time. And then you still, if you're the Knicks, you still possibly have the opportunity to get a third player, a third piece, maybe a Mark Gasol. And you can possibly.
The Knicks getting Mark Gasol.
Yeah, he's a free agent.
Oh, a free agency. Yeah.
Maybe you're able to compete and at least get to the Eastern Conference final.
It would be a good move for them. I mean, the Knicks, I'm not sure if the Knicks could, I don't know if that makes the Knicks a championship contender.
No, I'm not saying it makes them a championship contender, okay, but it definitely makes them compete in the East.
I totally agree. It definitely makes them compete. All right, now it's about time for one of our popular segments. You know, some of us like to go hard, man. We go hard in the paint, so I'm about to drop that beat.
Drop it, Flocka.
Say it again, because I went down. Say it again.
Drop it, Flocka.
All right, here you go.
I go hard in the...
I'm gonna let you go first, huh?
You gonna let me go first?
Yeah, because I'm trying to find mine. I got fancy basketball team.
I got fancy basketball team too. I'm going with the guy who's coming off of the pec injury, Al Horford.
Oh wow!
I think Al Horford he's going to be a guy that's going to, he's a double double. In Atlanta, he's your best player, and to me, he's not a championship for a championship team. He's not the number one piece. But if Atlanta wanted to get adventurous later on in the season, you saw the run you made with him without him in the lineup last year. Get you some nice assets, nice pieces, build over. But I think Al Horford goes hard in the paint this week.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Greg Monroe. He came back from the little one-game suspension. There was talks about him being benched in Detroit, but he's still putting up numbers. It also talks about how Stan Van Gundy isn't a big fan of him, but you know all he does is produce a double-double. So I'm going to go with my man Georgetown's own.
To add on to that,
Greg Monroe,
how could Stan Van Gundy not be a fan of Greg Monroe but be a fan of Josh Smith?
That's what gets me.
Josh Smith is going to make Stan Van Gundy's head explode. All those threes he's going to
How are you a fan of him over? I mean, I know Andre Drummond is an athletic freak, but like Monroe is more of a constant. A skilled player.
He's a highly skilled big. Yeah. But he's going to have to go somewhere for them to really appreciate what. It's going to take a team to really want to highlight him, to feature him for the league. I'm a huge fan of his game.
Yeah, I think he's smart. He plays such a smart game to me.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's been a great show. We're about to wrap this thing up. Before we wrap up this great
Urban Sports Chicken Wrap.
Before we wrap up this great Urban Sports Team show, what you want to tell the people? Period. Out there.
Today was election day. I hope you all got out there and voted. I'm not telling you which way to vote. You know what I mean? But I hope you did exercise your right to vote. Once again, we want to thank you all for listening to us over these past 2 hours. You guys are the reason we do this. We're sports fans just like you. We just took it upon ourselves to give ourselves a platform. I hope people listen to us and share our thoughts and our voices with the world.
Yeah, it was the same thing Will just said. It was, today was the day that we had the opportunity. We get the opportunity to vote. I just hope that everybody educate themselves before they vote. Just don't say, okay, I'm going to vote Democrat, I'm going to vote Republican. Just educate yourselves. Because this is we're blessed. You know, there's certain countries don't get this opportunity to vote and have this impact in politics or in their community or in their country. So we have the opportunity to do that. So I hope that everybody took it seriously. They did it. And they're proud of themselves and be proud that you did it. You made an impact. You made a stand. We are the people. We have a voice. Always remember that.
All right, man. Been real.
Yeah.
199 next week.
Yeah, 199.
And we're shooting for 200.
Shoot for 200. Special show.
Maybe we're going to have a special show. We're going to have a stripper pole in here. We're going to have the black bottles, the rosé.
Rosé.
You know what I mean? We're just going to do it up, man. Ciroc. All of those cliches, hip-hop cliches that you see in the videos, man.
Oh, man. Tip drill.
Yeah.
I like that, man.
We're doing it up.
All right, man. As the Urban Sports say.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega. Drop that beat, son.